I don't really have a set of questions or anything here prepared. I just want to get as much information on what's going on in Australia as possible.
Okay. So, so you've got the Australian Dodgeball Federation, which governs dodgeball in Australia. And then we've got our state leagues, and then we've got our local leagues as well. But I think dodgeball's sort of been around probably maybe like the last 10 years or more potentially in Australia. So I don't know if that's as long as it's been around for you guys or.
I can say that I am not sure about that. I know that our college circuit has been around since like roughly 2005. So probably Miles, do you know when Premier started?
Premier started last year, so...
Or, I guess, the Elite.
I mean, if you're thinking of Elite, I want to say Elite started in 2011, or maybe, like, it was really tiny around then. But I know, like, it didn't really start growing until, like, 2013, 2014. So it may have been around but a little bit before that. But if you talk about, like, USA Dodgeball, like, the new and main USA Dodgeball started about 2 years ago, I believe. And then... it was run by a guy that don't remember his name that was doing it kind of, I don't want to say sketchily, if that's a word. but he was, from what I've been hearing about it, it wasn't the best run USA Dodgeball. So that was being run kind of poorly for about 10 or so years, if not longer.
Yeah, I think I was actually aware of it. Like I would follow it on social media a little bit, but I knew there was something going on. but it looks good. Like, I think USA Dodgeball has done a great job, and I think everything's moving in the right direction. Everything looks like it's being run well.
I sure hope so. Lauren, will you take just a brief minute here to kind of introduce yourself and give us a little bit of your background with dodgeball?
Yeah. So I first started playing dodgeball in like 2010, 2011. So before I got into dodgeball, I was actually playing European handball. So that was sort of something that I played. I actually played for Australia when I was in my younger years, and our team went and played dodgeball as part of like a fun training exercise where we could all sort of, because we could all just throw really well.
Yeah.
So we thought, oh, this will be fun. And after we got into that, that was sort of what hooked me. So ever since then I was playing in anything I could play in, and then 2015 I started Zany Sports Dodgeball. So I started my own league in Sydney. Mm-hmm. And I've been running that ever since, and I also run the Best of Dodgeball page as well.
Really? I did not know that.
I started Best of Dodgeball in 2016, but I was actually friends with Emily from Canada. Mm-hmm. And she had also run her own, I think it was called Dodgeball Highlights. And we both kind of were friends at the time, and we kind of randomly stumbled upon each other and were like, oh, you run that page. And she's like, you run that page. And we decided to merge it.
Wow, that could definitely give this podcast a nice twist here, because that's new information. And I want to just thank you now, because you gave me a shout out at I think it was round one last year. Gave me a little feature, so I appreciate you.
I'm jealous, man.
Lauren, how does Zany Sports Dodgeball, correct?
Yeah, so I started Zany Sports as an alternative sports sort of business. So We offer dodgeball, we offer Quidditch, and sort of looking into branching out into those sort of alternative sports. But I think because of my passion for dodgeball, I've kind of just been stuck on that. It's sort of taken up majority of my focus.
Yeah.
So I just sort of rebranded it as Zany Sports Dodgeball, and then I'll also be rebranding other pages as Zany Sports Quidditch and sort of have those offshoots.
That's really cool. So do you have your own facility, or do you rent out space and you just coordinate with property owners to get, you know, practice times and things like that?
That's right. Yeah. So we just hire court time.
Okay.
And hire venues and then operate our competitions via that avenue. I would love to have my own venue, but I think that's kind of a long-term dream.
Yeah, that's something that we're hopefully have a few years down the road as well.
Yeah, I would say living the dream, that'll be the plan. But quick question for you, Lauren. So what's like the turnout for the sport that you hold? Like how many, like on a rough estimate, how many people come for week to week?
We're only quite small. So we've got, I think at our peak, we probably had about 200 or so members. That were playing, but not so much anymore. So now we're sort of probably sitting at around, I think after COVID as well, we're probably sitting at about 60 to 100 players. And we're only running two nights a week at the moment. But we did have a point where we were running, you know, five nights a week, all that sort of stuff. But I think what my focus at the moment is trying to get into sort of the youth market and schools. Mm-hmm. So we're running a couple of school programs and stuff like that. And that's where I'm going today. So after I have a chat with you guys, we're actually doing a community development program. So we're sort of going into a low socioeconomic area to sort of, it's part of a behavioral change program where we're basically introducing dodgeball to these kids that are from sort of difficult backgrounds and using it as a diversional sort of thing to sort of
channel that energy.
So a lot of it was dealing with children with aggression and anxiety and all these sorts of issues. So we do that for 2 hours every Friday, and it's really rewarding. So I think that's a good direction for us to be going in.
That's cool. Awesome. I forgot it is actually Friday there for you now. So what is it like in the future? Is it cool? Did the U.S. know the results of the election yet?
I know. I've actually been watching the election quite closely. I feel sorry for you guys. It must be so difficult to just see how unstable everything is.
Yeah, it's almost to a point where you're just exhausted and you just want it to be over.
Yeah, but it's interesting to see how people respond. Like I've been kind of avoiding social media, but at the same time, I've been kind of stalking certain pages too, just to see how people are reacting. Like I've had my worries about certain people, and I'm like, okay, may have to boot you out. But so far, I haven't had to do it yet, so I'm I'm okay with that. But then again, you never know what's gonna happen when the final results drop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everyone's watching closely.
So Lauren, which one came first, Best of Dodgeball or Zany Sports?
Zany Sports came first. So that was in 2015. That was a project. So I was studying sports management at uni, and that was sort of a business model that I wanted to get going. And I sort of was sitting on it for 3 years going, oh, how do I get this started? So that came about in 2015. And then, so in 2016, there was a world championships that were held in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the host team got to put in a second team. So it was Team Melbourne. So I was on Team Melbourne. So that was my first sort of world championship experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was something that sort of sparked a bit more of my passion for the sport and wanting to sort of showcase the athleticism of all our players and that sort of thing. And that was also, so Emily was playing for Canada at the time, and she actually stayed with us for 2 weeks because she was on holidays around Sydney. And then it was funny because we were hanging out for all this time, and then she went back home, and then I worked on Best of Dodgeball on my side, and then she already had this page that had existed on Instagram. And then she was just messaging me, touching base, being like, hey, how's everything going? And then I'm like, have you seen this Dodgeball highlight page? And she's like, oh, I run that page. And she's like, do you run that Best of Dodgeball page? I was like, yeah. It just sort of was what meant to be. So we worked together on it for quite a while. So
that's very cool. That's
awesome, though.
So when you guys do your practices for Zany, I'm kind of going to fast forward here and then come back to a couple more questions. But when you guys are doing your training sessions, is it a lot of open gym, or is it kind of coordinated that you want to work in some drills, or How do you guys set that up?
So we do a variety. So if we're looking to sort of recruit for a season, or we normally do 13-week competitions. Mm-hmm. So what I normally do is I host maybe like 2 or 3 free trial sessions, which is drop-in sessions. But I sort of target them towards new players, and we have 2 courts. So we separate the veteran players on 1 court and then the beginners on the other court. And we take a bit of time to put the beginners through an orientation, introducing them to the sport. But we also host separate events. We did a thing called Dodge Fit, which was basically sort of like we did this during the COVID time, which was basically an outdoor training boot camp, but we just incorporated dodgeball related exercises, and we're using the balls and doing some sort of drills in addition to some normal sort of like fitness stuff. And then we sort of brought that across to when we hire our courts, we'll host like training sessions, like open to whatever teams or players want to sort of improve their skills. We sort of do that as well. But yeah, so at the moment we've currently got our season happening. So I'm running drop-ins alongside that as well. So I've got the players that are locked in for the season, but then I've also got a casual option, which is a good way, I think, to bring in new players that might not be able to commit to a full season, but they still want to kind of come in when they can.
That's very cool. So you guys have teams that do they play on the same team twice a week, every week? You said for 13 weeks, right?
So we have it on a certain day of the week. So we've got our Monday league, so they play every Monday for a 13-week season. And then we have our Thursday, which is a separate thing, and it just works the same way. So players, if they want to play in two, they can play in two. And if they just want to play one, they play in one. But yeah, it's just one. It's one game a week. And then if we have any sort of free court time that's sort of open, we allow players that are part of our competition to be able to play in that sort of drop-in section for free as part of their rego.
Okay.
Anyone that's an external player will just pay a casual fee and drop in for it.
I think that drop-in idea is actually a really good idea, especially for if you're trying to grow a league. Because I know in our, at least for the league I play in, it's not really a league. It's kind of just an open gym. So, like, we'll have, like, at most, like, 20 people on 20 people and just play ball at the wall chaos.
Too. We call it all-in brawl is what we call it.
Oh, that's so much better than the open gym. I'd rather call it brawl, too. But, yeah, like, I feel like that's a great way to start a league, especially if it's coming off the ground and you have a lot of new people that don't know what they're doing. Instead of having them jump into, like you said, like a brawl, having it kind of be a little bit more organized, a little bit more, I guess, new people friendly. That's a great way to kind of implement new players into the scene.
Yeah. And another thing that we try to do is, so I run Zany Sports, but I also run it with the help of my friend Robert and my brother Connor. So they were both on the men's Australian team as well. So what we normally do is we separate each other. So we run 3 separate teams and we kind of mentor a team each. So we try and make sure that we're personally sort of engaging with new players and giving them a pathway onto our team. And then we develop them and give them the skills and the knowledge they need to sort of learn the game. And then they sort of run free. We let the butterfly out once the season's over, and then the new players start finding their own things or saying, or, you know, doing what they want to do. So I think it's important to provide that sort of security for a new player, because it's easy for new players to come in and just get smashed and then not really understand why, or they might lose their passion for the sport and just not return. So retention is important.
So when you were starting up Zany Sports, how hard was it to get people the first start to come? Or did you have a solid dodgeball following in the area?
There were other leagues in the area that were closer to the city. So at the time I was pretty obsessed at the time. I was playing 3 different leagues. Mm-hmm. But there was sort of a gap in the market further out west of Sydney. So, and that was where I was living. So I just opened one up there. But I did invest a lot in marketing and advertising to sort of get it up off the ground. And I think Facebook was a big sort of driver for that. So we would sort of create a drop-in event or a free trial event. and put some advertising spend towards that, and that would return us a lot of attendance. And then it was just about converting those players after they had experienced the sport for the first time and being like, hey, how'd you find it? Do you want to sign up? And then that was that sort of crucial sort of part. But yeah, I don't know though, because I found that, I mean, I'm not a marketing genius, but I know that the algorithms have sort of changed with Facebook. So it's sort of like the same advertising spend that I would have originally spent on Facebook to get somebody to attend. I had a time where I had 90 people show up to one trial event, which was like huge.
Mm-hmm.
And then the exact same, like the exact same strategy now would return like 30 people maybe.
Yeah.
So it's just like, what has changed? How do we get back to that? And I think that's, I guess, the barrier for me is sort of constantly adjusting to the times and finding new ways to bring people in.
Yeah. I want to touch on kind of how, so when we had Lisa on from Canada, she kind of broke down how different their, I guess, their play is versus international play, and how their international team recruits nationally for them. So how does that work in Australia? Do you guys have like city teams? Do you have teams that are made up of people all over the country? How does that work for you guys?
So we've got a few, it's in a moment of transition at the moment, but previously, so we've got our elite level is we've got the Australian Dodgeball League.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got each state has their own state competition. And then basically at the end of the year, we have the Australian Dodgeball Championships, and it's the top four teams from each state's competition will come together and compete. So the teams that rank quite highly in that competition get kind of viewed towards selection. And then there's also the pathway of going to trials and stuff like that. So each state will have, so if you're not as a part of an elite team or a state team, they would have state trials where you would just come for a weekend or an evening or whatever, and they would do drills and that sort of stuff. And then they would recommend a percentage of players to go to the national training camp. And then that national training camp would have the top players from all over Australia come together and compete. And then they would get selected or shortlisted for the Australian team via that avenue. But I do know they're working on changing some of that process in the future. So I'm not sure what they're, if they've announced any of that yet, but I think change is coming.
Yeah. That seems much more in depth than what we do here. And I mean, I've never gone through it or done it, but Miles, you can speak more into this, but if you're going to, you know, like state tryouts and then national tryouts, because we just have the national combine, right, Miles?
Yeah, it's just for us, it's just the national combine. So the way it works is you attend, so since WDBF is foam, it's a foam only tournament at the moment. So what they do is you go to any USA Dodgeball approved event that is holding foam divisions, and you play, usually have a scout at those events, and you just play throughout the tournament. If they like what they see, they'll send an invite to the national combine, which then once, if you're invited to the combine, you go to the combine, and then it is, I think it's a 1-day event where they do drills, they do gameplay, they do scrimmages, and based on the results or how you do and how the scouts view you during that day, they'll make their team selection within a couple weeks of that.
Wow. Okay. So that's quite a short time frame.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like a one and done type of event. Like you have to do very well that one day, which is kind of nice that way, instead of having like 3 days of playing, because one, there's a lot of time invested, a lot of time off of work. So it's just one and done. But at the same time, if you have one bad day, then it's kind of hard to kind of make up for that.
Yeah. I hope you're not sick that day.
Oh, yeah.
Miles, I thought you could also apply to try out, or that you,
so the way that works, so you have to, it's not like you're applying to try out, it's more like you're telling them you're interested in of trying out for Team USA. So like with those so when you go to the those foam events that I told you about for the USA approved events, you usually, they're like, okay, if you want to try out for Team USA, sign this flyer, we'll give you a wristband, so they know, so the scouts know who they're looking for. So that's kind of like the application process. It's not like, oh, I want to apply for Team USA, and then you show up at the National Combine. So no, it's the application is mostly just for the scouts to know who they're looking for. So they're like, for I think the last year it was a green wristband you had to wear. Mm-hmm. So anyone wearing a green wristband is someone that's really trying to out for Team USA. So the scouts are looking at players with those wristbands and seeing how they play, and if they like what they saw, then they would invite you to the National Combine.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So
interesting process.
Yeah, Lauren, when you, I guess 2016, you said was your first international game play. Did you play on Australia's national team after that?
Yeah. So I played Team Australia 2018. So the Worlds that was held in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And I think before that, in 2017, I did play cloth in the qualifier, which was in Malaysia. But that was as far as I sort of went in terms. I think cloth was something that I struggled with sort of moving forward. And that, I think that was the qualifying event to get to the Madison Square Garden Worlds that was hosted by WWE.
Oh, wow. So I'm going to assume foam is your preferred ball type?
Yeah definitely.
Have you ever played cloth?
Yeah, so I played cloth, but it's like there's basically no cloth dodgeball in New South Wales where I live. It's sort of primarily in Victoria down at Melbourne. So I think there wasn't a lot of exposure. So I think I made the team just because you've got sort of the basic dodgeball skills that you sort of transfer over from the foam game.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, yeah, strategically I struggled, and the ball difference, I struggled a little bit with that too.
That's fair. How long did you play handball before you transitioned into dodgeball?
I played handball since I was like 16, so like probably 5 or more years of handball.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how well did that transfer over the skill wise and training wise?
That was good. So the women's handball size is pretty much the same 7-inch size as what the foam ball is.
Mm-hmm.
I think just the only difference was grip wise. And I think with handball we use something called resin, so it's like a sticky substance that you put on the ball so you can kind of get a bit more whip and movement on the ball when you throw it. But I think it transferred really well. I think like with my coaching and everything that I'd have from my handball coach, a lot of that sort of transferred over really well. So I was always throwing really well, but surviving was like another thing because I was always in handball you don't body catch in handball, you catch with your arms out. So I was a massive reacher and, you know, trying to like go for these balls that I shouldn't be going for.
Yep. That's the worst habit to try to kill.
Yeah. So that handball training, what are some things that you transferred over into dodgeball that are more beneficial or did you introduce to current dodgeball players that maybe weren't looking at training as seriously?
I think some of it was not a lot, but I think some of it was sort of like when you're warming up and stuff to always have the ball in your hand. I was always taught by my coach to always have the ball in my hand no matter what I was doing. So if you're doing your warm up and you're running and you're doing laps or whatever, do it with the ball in your hand, because it's something that sort of trains the grip in your hand and your fingers to sort of always have that sort of control. And then I think a lot of it was just repetitive throwing too. Like I was told when I was training for handball, I was literally shooting the same shot like 300 times in the one night. Ooh. The exact same shot over and over and over again until I was exhausted and until I hit it every single time. And then, so I think accuracy and that sort of stuff is quite important in the dodgeball game. And when you're training, to do that sort of, that can be incorporated. So I think a lot of accuracy training and just that repetitive motion to sort of get that accuracy going.
I'm actually really glad that you said that because I do that in my warm up and I get made fun of because it's like, what are you trying to become one with the ball? It's like, I don't know what it is. I like having the ball in my hand when I'm doing stuff. Like before a tournament, I always have a ball in my hand just walking around when I'm stretching. It, I'm really glad that there's some reinforcement there for me. I appreciate that.
Let's say, I haven't heard that in like real life. I've only seen that like TV shows or like movies or like animes where like you said, become one with the ball, where like if they're on a training arc or whatever and they have the ball, no matter what they do, can't drop it. They got to keep holding on to it. Same thing with the whole like repetition, like you said, the 300 shots of the same shot every time. Like I've only again seen that in mostly in those movies. So it's kind of interesting to see that like transfer over into real life as well. But it's also interesting, like now that, especially for me, like I'm training at working at a baseball training facility. So seeing different sports, do different warm ups, see them doing different types of training, and seeing how that can translate to dodgeball, that should be really interesting, because I've always been like I don't want to say like tunnel vision, but like I always thought there's kind of one way to train, and then now that I've seen like other sports do different things, it's been eye opening. It's kind of nice.
So Lauren, what I know. You are mentoring these teams, but are you playing in a different league other than Zany right now?
So I play in the state league. So my state league team is Liverpool Lightning. Mm-hmm. And we've been quite successful since we started competing in the state competition. So we've won 2 golds. And we came second at the Australian Dodgeball Championships, I think, in 2017. So we got a silver there. But that's probably the only other competition that I compete in. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll do tournaments as well. So we used to sort of travel down to Melbourne, which was, I think Melbourne is sort of like the largest population of dodgeball leagues and players. So if they were hosting, like if a league was hosting an event, we would fly down and compete in it. But other than that's probably the extent. We do API as well. I don't know if you've heard of that. Have you heard of API?
I have not heard of API.
I have not either.
So it's called the Asia Pacific Invitational. So that was
Yeah, I have heard of that one. Yep.
Yeah. So we also compete in that. So it's almost like a sort of like a club based thing as well. So Zany Sports will enter teams from our club. And other dodgeball clubs will enter their teams, as well as sort of independent clubs as well. And that's probably one of the largest tournaments that's hosted each year.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but yeah, I know when I was an alternate on the 2018 team, I know that was one of the tournaments that the USA teams wanted to go to. I think it was like the European Cup that was on in 2018. And then some of the team members also flew down to, I believe, API for that tournament as well. So that's the only thing I know about it, but it's, from what I know, it's a pretty big tournament. Like they do 3 different ball types there, right? Or no, that might've been different. No, never mind. I'm thinking of the other event. Never mind. So ignore me there. Yeah. Cause it's just Bolton, right?
I think they are planning on doing that though. So I think they're planning on introducing a cloth category. But yeah, I do remember some of the USA fellas came down. So the last one that was hosted was in New Zealand. I think they actually won it, so they did well.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I think they won the foam one, and then they got, I think, wrecked in cloth, which was kind of expected for the most part. But yeah.
So that's the Atlantic Cup. Is that the one that you were talking
about? Yep, I think that was that one. Yeah. I'm getting them mixed up because I didn't go. I just heard about it. So yeah, that's the one I'm thinking of. But anyway, just moving on. So I have a question about Australia first. So how... Like, I know Australia is giant, and I know, based on what I've been told, most of the population kind of is on the outskirts of Australia versus, like, dead center. So how far apart are, like, most of the dodgeball leagues, like, in terms of states, compared to each other?
So my league, and there's another league in the inner west of Sydney, so that's probably maybe a 40-minute drive difference. Okay. And
that's not bad.
Yeah, so that's, and then you've got, I think that's sort of it. So you've got me in the, I'm trying to think as well, because a lot of the indoors recreation centers run their own dodgeball sort of competitions as well. So they're sort of scattered all across.
Okay.
All across Sydney, but it's basically within the Sydney metro area, which is probably like maybe a 40 or 50 kilometer radius. And anything outside of that, there probably isn't anything.
Hmm. So I think what my main question was, like, all right, so if I think of it, if you think of it like dodgeball hubs, so like I know you said
Melbourne,
you're in Melbourne, right? Like, yeah. That's another hub, or like the biggest hub in Australia, right?
Yes.
Okay, so like where you're at compared to Melbourne and maybe like another hub that you would consider in Australia, like how far apart are those? I think that's what I was trying to get at.
So between Sydney and Melbourne?
Yeah.
Like the distance, or?
I guess travel time would be.
I have to catch a flight. So it's like a 2-hour flight from Sydney to Melbourne, or it's like a 9 or 10 hour drive, something like that. Oh,
wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I was just trying to get a gauge, just a little bit. Yeah, I was trying to get a rough gauge because I know, at least in America, we're a giant country. So, like, getting to any other, like, main hubs outside of, like, I don't know, I guess an hour drive radius of where you're currently at is usually, like, more than a couple hours, depending on which state you're going to.
Right.
Like, I know just in, like, the Midwest, like, it's usually, like, a 3 to, like, 8 hour drive, depending on which, like, Midwestern state you're going to, and mm-hmm. then you're trying to go outside like the Midwest to like the East Coast, the West Coast, South Coast. I don't know why it's the South Coast, but like those, like kind of like just different regions, it could be anywhere from like 8 hour drive to like 2 hour flights, depending on where you're going.
Yeah.
If we want to compete in anything that's not in our state, we have to get a flight to it. I think there's Adelaide Dodgeball down in South Australia, and I think they drove across to New South Wales once, and it was something like a ridiculous, like, I don't even know how many hours it took them, like over, like almost 2 days or something to drive over. Wow. And they hit a kangaroo away, and it was like,
oh my God.
It was just full on, like, you'd have to get a flight if you were ever going to do it over here.
Yeah, but I think I know a couple of guys that have done a drive somewhere that in the US, and I'm like, dude, I'm not that. I mean, as much as I love dive, but I'm not that invested to drive. Like, I'll pay the plane ticket instead of driving. Cause that's awful.
The plane ticket's well worth it.
Oh yes, like even if it's like a 6 hour drive, I'm debating on the plane
ticket. I think an interesting thing to note as well while we're on that topic is, because there's a large proportion of dodgeballers in Melbourne, when they do select the national team, a lot of the previous years, a lot of the time players needed to travel to Melbourne to sort of do the trainings with the core squad. So that was something that myself and a few other girls had to do, was we would have to fly down probably like once a month or once every couple months to compete in trainings well. It was a sort of a tricky thing, because I think once the numbers grow in the other states, I think it would probably be more worthwhile to host like training once in each, sort of share it around.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a situation where you might have like maybe 3 or 4 people from New South Wales and like 1 or 2 from South Australia, but then the rest of the team was Melbourne based, so it was sort of just made more sense for everybody to travel to Melbourne to do their trainings. But yeah, the financial cost, obviously, it's quite large to do that too,
right?
Yeah, but so that's kind of how we have it in the US. I know, especially for the women's team, I think almost half of them were LA based, or at least in California state. But they ended up doing the training camps in Texas, which is kind of cost financial equal for everybody. So it's not just everyone flying to LA, which is one of the more expensive places to fly to. So they kind of made it even that way, which is nice. But we have the same issue there. The only difference is, instead of doing like once a month like you guys do, they only had one practice prior to Worlds. So that's the biggest difference there.
Yeah. That's tough.
Yeah.
And that was something that happened to me in the 2018 team. I remember you guys saying like they selected the national squad after 2 weeks or something. But in Australia, they didn't actually select the playing squad, the final squad, until I think it was like 1 or 2 or something, 3 months out from the tournament. So I remember when I was actually selected in 2018, I flew down and I only had one training with the actual team that I was playing with over at Worlds.
Wow.
Before we went over, and then we did a couple trainings in LA, but that was something that I was like, oh man.
do you ever, I know we have a handful of listeners in New Zealand, do you guys ever go out there to play games, or do you guys ever get people from New Zealand that come to your tournaments?
Yes and no. So the main sort of connection we have with New Zealand was the sort of foundation of the Asia Pacific Invitational Tournament. So before it was called the Asia Pacific Invitational, it was actually called the Trans-Tasman Anzac Tournament. So basically over Anzac Day, the New Zealand teams and the Australian teams would sort of unite together, and we would have a tournament to sort of pay respects as part of that sort of time. But I think what happened over the years, it started to grow, and then we started to get a lot of influence from Malaysia and Singapore. So we sort of just opened up that invitation. But that was probably the main connection that we have with those clubs, was via that tournament, which they hosted every year.
Hmm. That's really cool.
Yeah, it adds a little bit of, like, I guess, culture to tournaments, which you don't really see all that often, especially over here, where it's just, we're just going to throw a tournament. There's no, like, backstory to it. There's no...
Yeah.
Meaning to, I guess.
Yeah, I think the only blended really tournament is the I never remember the name of it, the foam one in Canada, in Toronto, that the huge one.
Oh god, what is it? I should know
that. I'm not,
it's gonna come to me later though.
Yeah, just blurt it out once you think of it. But I think that's the really the only tournament that we have that's kind of like blended, like US and Canada. I would love to see Canadian teams come down to, I mean, we had it Minneapolis, and I don't think anyone's going to come down from Grand Rapids, but if we had like a Detroit based tournament and people came across from Ontario or in the Toronto area to play on this side, that would be really cool.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing, and it's a good way to sort of unite countries and states and other sort of people together and it's quite social as well. So I think anything that sort of helps unite the community helps grow it.
Yeah. And also just different play styles. You pick up on things that different countries do well, and you can implement it into your game and vice versa for the other country.
Yeah, that's true. Because when you go through like your national team training, you're sort of taught a specific style of strategy. And then that kind of flows down throughout your sort of country. So like I know all the strategy that I learned, I would bring back to my league and I would teach my players. And then all the players are sort of using the same calls and that sort of stuff.
Right.
But then that would be obviously completely different from an American perspective or a Malaysian perspective. So that's right.
So what do you see for the near future for Zany Sports? Do you see a positive growth for dodgeball in your area as well as in the country? Or are you seeing where you're looking to branch out more to different sports first?
I would probably be looking at branching out into other sports, because they would also sort of complement and support dodgeball in the same kind of way. But dodgeball is something that's always been my passion and something that I'll probably be putting majority of my effort into. But it's sort of like Zany Sports is sort of not the only thing that I do as well. So I do contract work in sport on the side. So it's sort of tricky sort of running it and managing a sort of day job at the same time. If that makes sense.
Oh, we totally get it, because that's what we do here too.
It's tough. So I think it's something that I'll always do. Doesn't matter how big it gets or how small it gets. If there's somebody that wants to play, it's something that I'll always do and I'll always run it. But I definitely see a positive growth in the sport in New South Wales and Australia. I think there's a lot of other leagues out there that are growing and doing really well. So I think just the more people that are playing, I think the flow on effects of that will be good regardless.
Yeah, I think the more, you know, Instagram accounts I've been seeing for local teams, for leagues, for just the growth of the sport. It's really cool to see that. I didn't know all these existed really before we started doing this. Once we started doing this and we created our podcast Dodgeball page, those started popping up more and more because we had dodgeball in our name. So more dodgeball accounts popped up, and it was like, holy cow, I had no idea all this was going on outside of the United States. That's why we were really excited for this one, because we'd been watching listens come from Australia, from New Zealand. And I don't know if you went back and listened to any of those episodes, but like I told you, we've been just dying to get somebody in here from out that way so we could hear and get a take on what it's like out there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's, I mean, I think it's doing well. Like, and I mean, I had the same thing with the Best of Dodgeball is when on Instagram, I'd go and search and then all of these teams would come up. But I think it's cool because a lot of the state, even the local teams, but the state teams are all sort of encouraged to create their own sort of social media presence, which only kind of amplifies the awareness that we can kind of give for our sport. So, and I think like the Victorian, it's called the Victorian Dodgeball League. They've got something like, I think it's over like maybe 40 teams. And like it just, it's pretty sort of amazing to see that there's could be 40 different social media accounts all promoting the sport and all sort of growing. Like somebody's going to find out soon enough and we're going to have more and more people involved, which is good.
Yeah. Do you see more teams coming to state tournaments every year, or do you guys, you know, have the same core team and there's kind of like a revolving door of some new teams?
I think it's definitely growing. So the New South Wales Dodgeball League has grown to, I think it's, they've got about 12 mixed teams and they've introduced a men's and women's division as well. And I think what I'm enjoying seeing happen is a lot of the elite teams are basically creating, they call them like a baby team. Mm-hmm. So we've got Liverpool Lightning and then we've also got Lionsville Lightning, which is sort of like our new and up and coming players that we're sort of developing. So we're sort of the clubs themselves are growing. So a lot of the elite teams are sort of having branch offs where they all train together. They're sort of a core unit, which means they're sort of doubling the amount of teams involved in the state competition, which is good.
I say we need to do that here like desperately.
Yeah. I'm going to send some messages out after this too. We need to do regional pages as well as more team pages, just to get more eyes on it.
Yeah, but I know there's a handful of teams that do really well with dropping content. Like I know Corruption, like Chicago, Windy City Corruption, they mm-hmm. do a lot of content on their Instagram. So they're one of like the few teams that I see them posting regularly of highlights. Yeah, so if we can get like every team doing that, it'd be great.
I've noticed that Windy City Corruption, they send a lot of highlight videos to Best of Dodgeball. I recognize that name. I was like, I recognize that.
Yeah. Great job, guys. You're moving up in the world.
Yeah. We have so much film. I know the Columbus Gamecocks that I know there's like half the guys on the team don't have an Instagram account. So I need to compile this and sit down with, you know, two other guys on the team and start cutting up highlights. And I think I'm going to assign that out because I'm just too busy for that.
Yeah. But I know it's an investment of time, but like, if you think about it, like it's really, I mean, it is a lot of time, but it, for the amount of work it is, there's way more of a reward than there is a downside. And that's one thing like people have to get kind of in their heads. Like I know I could definitely put more time into it, but it's more about just prioritization. So like if you feel strongly about it, you'll find time, you'll make time, you'll figure out a way to make it work. So it's about just figuring out how to get it going and then figure out that like, hey, this is for the good of the sport. This will get more eyes on the sport. This will help more people get involved. So I'll suck it up. I'll put an hour or two of my day into doing this and making it work.
That's exactly right. And I mean, I can sort of note on a milestone here. We started a TikTok for Best of Dodgeball and we've reached 400,000 followers. And we've got some videos some highlights that we've posted that have reached like 40 million views. Wow. Like it's pretty crazy. And it's quite exciting to know that, you know, 40 million people have viewed this highlight video and are now aware that dodgeball is a legit sport and all that sort of stuff. You know what I mean? So I think it's quite exciting to be able to expose to so many people.
That's amazing. USA Dodgeball needs to just do that, like soon as possible.
Jake Mason, I'm calling you out. Do it. Make it now.
Does I don't know if you know this, Miles, but does US Dodgeball have a social media chair or a executive position?
I don't think so. I know they're active on social media, but I don't know. Like, I know, actually, I think Jake's in charge, to be honest, but I don't know if that's because of, like, he'll go to events for USA Dodgeball mm-hmm. and then, like, post, like, what's going on throughout that event. Like, Like he'll usually post like the agenda for the day or like where he's currently at in the event. But I don't know if that's his like main job or that's just something he does when he's at those events. So that's a good question.
Yeah, I'm going to ask Felix. Right, Miles, do you have anything else you want to ask Lauren? If not, I'm going to turn the tables over to her, see if there's anything she wants to find out about us.
I got, I think, one question. I think I've been holding on to it, so I want to make sure I get it out before I forget. So when it comes to starting a league, what are some things that current you could tell? Like, let's say you're coming back from the future, you meet your past self. What is some advice you would tell your past self to improve or do differently now that you know what it takes to run a league?
I think I would just say to haggle the hell out with your venue providers, because when I first got into it, I was just like, yes, 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 I don't care what you charge me, I just want to run my league. But then I just realized, like, I was getting charged so badly, and I was just so, like, from a business perspective, I was too terrified to sort of argue for a better deal in the fear that maybe they wouldn't give me the courts. But I think being able to sort of be assertive with negotiating your price is something that you can reinvest all those savings back into your league to help grow it in the outset, and buy everything in bulk.
Yeah.
buy your balls in bulk, all that sort of stuff, and just get the merch stores going early. So just all those extra revenue streams that help out are really important.
Yeah, that is something that to consider when. Where do you guys play at? Do you play at a school or do you play at like a rec center?
Well, we play so it's quite difficult in Australia, at least in New South Wales, to get hire of school halls. So they're quite restrictive with us on that. So we're hiring indoor cricket centers. So it's basically like that turf court with the tension net.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that's obviously quite expensive for us to hire out. So, I mean, it suits the sport well because all the balls are contained, but there's a lot of availability issues, which is the main struggle at the moment, which is trying to find a venue that will lock you down for an extended period of time and that aren't already booked out.
Right. Wow. Well, Lauren, I've learned a lot about, you know, dodgeball over there, and just it's really cool to see how dodgeball works. That, you know, I don't even know how far away. We're 16-hour time difference apart, and just sharing a passion for the game of dodgeball is amazing to me. I want to know if there's anything that you want to ask us, or if there's anything you want to know about U.S. dodgeball, or anything that comes to mind.
When was ball out dodgeball sort of a thing, and what was your goal with ball out dodgeball in terms of your future perspective on that?
All right, Brett, you take the lead. You initiated it, so I'll let you take it.
Well, so it had been, like you said, it was something that was on my mind for a while. It had been something that I knew it was two things that I had a passion for. I had a passion for dodgeball, and I had a passion for health and fitness. And I really wasn't sure how to get information out to people and how to get more eyes on the sport, how to help grow the sport, and really raise the level of gameplay in the sport is what I wanted to do. So I had toyed around the idea with a Facebook group. I had toyed around with, you know, maybe just a dodgeball health and fitness Instagram page. And then a little while after that, I got really into podcasts. And I'm the kind of person that I can sit down and talk to anybody. I love talking. I love interacting with people. So I figured that's a great fit. And it was about that time where I had decided that that was what I wanted to do, but I really didn't want to do it by myself. Not only because I didn't know what I was doing, but because I wanted to mix in some variation, and I knew I would do better bouncing ideas off of somebody and being able to have a conversation with another person. So Miles had started up the Dodgeball Fit to Win page on Facebook and was like, this is perfect. I think this was supposed to happen this way. So I sent out a message over to Miles and was like, hey, I don't know how you feel about this or if you even know me, but I have this idea. Are you in?
So yeah.
That was really how it began. And it really, the idea started, what, November of 2019?
Give or take a couple of weeks, yes.
Yeah, and then we decided that, you know what, it's a new year, 2020 is around the corner. That's when we're going to launch. And we might not know what we're doing, but we're going to give it a shot and we'll figure it out along the way.
Yeah. And it's funny because prior to him messaging me, we only exchanged words like a handful of times. We like, we're opponents, like we play in the same region. So me and Brett have only like spoken like, hey, good game, man. Or like, hey, you got me out. Or like kind of like casual, like one-liners, like that.
Yeah.
A handful of times. So we've never really had like a long, like, conversation. So like we were more, I think we were less than acquaintances, because I don't think I actually knew your name at the time.
Probably not.
Yeah. So like when he messaged me, I was like, have I met this dude? Who's this dude messaging me? It was kind of like one of those, like in high school, and like you go leave high school for a couple years, and that dude just kind of messages you like, hey man, how's it going? Like, I want to get you into my pyramid scheme. It kind of came off at that type of vibe. So I'm like, this sounds kind of sketchy, to be honest. But I was like, you know what? He's from Dodgeball, so it can't be that bad. So I'm like, I'm going to give it a try. And I'm so glad I said yes, because I was leaning heavily to no initially, because I'm an introvert at heart for the most part, depending on who I'm talking to. And a podcast just sounded awful. Like, you know what? I'm not that much of a talker, but he came off as someone that can like kind of take over that spot. So I'm like, this is fine for me. Like, I can let him do most of the talking. I'll respond when I can and like just get better at it as time goes on. So I think that's how it's been going, and it's been working great.
I mean, he's pretty persuasive. I'm an introvert as well, and he convinced me to do this, and I'm just like, oh man, I'm gonna say something wrong.
Well, that was funny when we were exchanging messages, that, you know, you were, well, I don't want to, you know, speak for all of Australia, and it's like, well, you know, this really, what we do is we just have conversations. I mean, we're not going to sit here and bullet point questions for you, and you know, your answer is going to be blanketed for everybody that plays dodgeball in the Australian region. We're more interested in what you're observing, what you're seeing, and your story with dodgeball.
Yeah, because well, so everyone's answer is going to be different. Like, we're not expecting everyone to have like the correct information at the exact time. Like you said, like with Australia remodeling, we weren't really expecting you to have the answer to that, because you're not on the Australian board. And even if you were, you may not be permitted to give out that information at this time. So like, everyone's answers are going to be different no matter what questions we're asking or when we're asking. So yeah, it's just more about just having fun with what you can provide at the time and then just rolling what we get.
Yeah,
and that's right. And I think it's a good gateway too for potentially doing more. And I can probably hit up some of the Australian Dodgeball Federation board members to maybe get involved and be able to chat to you guys as well.
Oh, that would be amazing. I'd love to hear from more people. Anyone we can get on that wants to, you know, talk dodgeball, let them know.
Yeah. Well, so we'll love to spread ball out's influence all over the world. That'd be great.
Well, I know you got to get running, Lauren. I know you got little kids to play dodgeball with. Hopefully you take it a little easy on them. But is there anything else that you have for us?
No, that's everything. Thanks for having me. I appreciate the time you've taken to listen to everything.
Hey, we appreciate you working with our schedules and the time difference and coming on and donating an hour of your time to ball out.
You're welcome.
Well, very appreciated.
Well, guys, if you're not following by now, everybody follow Ball Out on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter. Lauren, where can they follow you guys at and learn more about Australian Dodgeball?
You can follow the Australian Dodgeball Federation, you can follow Zany Sports, and you can follow Best of Dodgeball.
All right, guys, so go give everybody a follow, support dodgeball around the world. Miles, I don't have anything else, so I'm good if you're good.
I'm good, man.
All right, then we out.
Peace out.